Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire, to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Inez Russell, founder and executive director of Friends for Life. Hosting the conversation is KWBU President Joe Riley. This program was recorded March 12, 2015 at the KWBU studio.
Welcome to the Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley. I'm talking right now with Inez Russell, who's the executive director for Friends for Life here in Waco and actually beyond Waco. Welcome, Inez.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a mama and a grandma, and very excited to be working with Friends for Life for the last 25 years. That's a big, big part of my world.
Are you always from Waco?
My dad was in the Air Force. He was an officer in the Air Force. So we traveled. We were everywhere until he retired here in Waco at James Conley, and been here ever since.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, Friends for Life. First, what is Friends for Life?
We are a nonprofit, a 501c3 charity that serves the elderly and people with disabilities. And we do that now in five different ways. We operate an adult daycare center that's open from 7:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, where we take care of people who aren't able to stay home by themselves. We have nursing care and activities, and we feed them breakfast, lunch, and a snack in the afternoon and provide transportation. We also have a legal guardianship program where we serve as guardian. We're appointed by the courts to take care of people who are not able to make decisions for themselves and don't have family who are qualified and willing to serve. We also have a money management program where we pay bills and help seniors and people with disabilities to pay their bills, make sure that their money's going to their care and not somebody else's. And we have independent living programs where we help people stay in their own homes as long as they possibly can. And we recruit and train and organize volunteers who help them mow their yards, go to the grocery store. We go to Caritas and pick up food for frail elderly and deliver it to them so that they'll be able to make it on their own as long as possible. We change light bulbs for them. We, making sure that people are able to get to their medical appointments is really important. So anything that empowers them and makes it possible for them to age in place, that's what that program's all about. And our last one is quality of life programs, and this is where we just let people know that somebody cares about them. We have an Adopt-a-Grandparent program and Friends for Thanksgiving, Gifts for Grannies and Grandpas, and lots of ways to let people know that there is somebody that they can call if they need help.
Mm-hmm. 25th year?
25 years.
Coming up in September, it'll be 26, I guess.
Yes, it will.
So it was not always this big an organization.
No.
Tell me about how Friends for Life got started.
Okay. Well, first I want to share with you that I spent a lot of time with my grandma when I was growing up, and my grandmother took care of everybody. She visited people in hospitals, nursing homes. She visited people who were in their own homes that she called shut-ins, and whatever they needed, she did. She cooked for them, baked for them, ran errands for them. She just took care of everybody. And I grew up believing everybody had somebody. They either had a big family like I have, or they had somebody like my grandma. But in the spring of 1989, I learned that's not true. I was visiting my dad in the hospital, and I heard a woman screaming. And I went to see what was wrong, and I found a lady who was close to 90. And she grabbed my arm, and she was crying. She said, "I'm dying, and I don't want to die alone. Please don't leave me." And I stayed, and she told me her whole life story. She'd been a librarian for 50 years. She had kids and grandkids, but nobody was coming to see her anymore. And she was sure that that meant she was dying. If she were going to live, people would still be coming. So I went and got my Bible, and I read the Bible to her, and got her some flowers and a stuffed animal, and mostly I listened. And she decided I wouldn't be doing all that if she were dying. She got well and went home. And I started looking then. Well, right after that happened, my dad was still in the hospital, and the nurses said, you know, there's another lady in this other room that doesn't have anybody. Would you visit her? And I did, and pretty much the same thing happened. And then they said, there's another one in this room that's all by herself. Would you visit her? So I did, and I thought, man, who takes care of these people? If they don't have a big family like I have, who takes care of them? And I started looking for something that I could bring to Waco that would take care of these people, and searched other parts of Texas and other parts of the country. And when I couldn't find anything, I started Friends for Life.
Okay. And what does that, when you say you started Friends for Life, what does that take? What is it? What did you set out to do? I understand your mission. There are people here who, at what you saw at first, and it grew beyond that. But here are these people who don't have anybody. So you have a mission, and you see a need. Well, what's the first step you take when you start an organization?
Well, you first have to go through a legal process of forming a 501c3. And we went through all of the paperwork to put it together, and then the attorney said, you know, it's going to take 6 months, could take 12, 18 months for them to come back and for the IRS to approve you as a 501c3 charity. And he called me 4 weeks later, and he said, I've never had this happen this fast. He said, clearly this is charity. This is not any ulterior motives. And so once I had that, then I could go ahead and set it all up. And it's from there, it's like setting up any kind of a business, because you need to have a place to operate. Well, I didn't have any money, so I borrowed an office, and I borrowed furniture, and borrowed a computer, and I ran an ad for volunteers, and nobody called, so figured out really early on that that's not how you get volunteers. You need to go face-to-face and talk to them and tell them about the people that need their help, and most people will help. Mm-hmm. And so started really small, just me in a one-room office on Waco Drive. And, you know, in the beginning, I recruited volunteers who would visit people in hospitals and then nursing homes. And then I started getting calls from people who said, you know, folks that are living in their own homes don't even have staff to check on them. Could you also recruit volunteers for that? And that's how we learned that some people needed more than a visit. That, you know, we found one lady sitting in the dark. She'd move from room to room as the light bulbs burned out in her house. And when the last one burned out, she was living in the dark. So we started a light bulb changing program. And we found another lady who she'd been stuck in her house for 5 years because she'd become wheelchair bound. She didn't have a ramp. So we started a ramp building program. And we got a call about a man who couldn't get his Meals on Wheels anymore because his porch was too rickety. So we started a minor household repair program. Every time we discovered a need, we would first see if anybody else was doing it, because if they were, we could just connect them with that resource. But if there wasn't anybody that was doing it, then we figured out some way that we could do it ourselves.
You have a board of directors?
I do.
I'm going to go back to the beginning again. How do you do that? What, you set up a board of directors, mm-hmm. You know, who's on your board?
Well, I originally set up two boards. I set up a governing board of directors, and I set up an advisory board. I didn't know really anything about gerontology or really social services. So my advisory board consisted of people in the community who were experts, you know, people who were either worked in aging, or they worked with people with disabilities, or maybe they worked with some type of provision of services to people. So I could learn from them. And then gradually over the years, we, you know, the governing board that I established grew, and we now have 14 members on our governing board, and they consist of business people for the most part. Some are retired, but business people, and not just from Waco, because now we have offices in San Antonio, Abilene, Tyler, Texas City, and Corpus. So we're trying to get board members who help represent the different areas that we serve.
How did this happen that you went in 25 years, and my guess is you didn't have a vision at first for anything as big as it was going to be, nor even necessarily growing beyond Waco.
That's correct.
How did that happen? How did it happen that you grew beyond Waco? What did somebody hear about you, or did you just see a need beyond Waco?
Well, one of the first services that we started offering was guardianship, because we got a call from Judge Matkin, who was our county judge here in McLennan County at that time, and he called within the first 6 months of Friends for Life and asked if we would be guardian of a man who had been found unconscious. He didn't have any family, and he needed somebody to help him make medical decisions. And we became his guardian, and over a period of time, the number of people that we were serving in guardianship grew. Adult Protective Services at that time was responsible for guardianship on a state level, and they discovered that we were doing guardianship, so they started referring people. And then they came to us at one point and said, would you like to get paid for this? Is that a trick question? Anyway, we negotiated a contract with them to provide guardianship services in McLennan County. And I got a call from them one day about a lady in Bell County. And they said, I know you don't serve Bell County, but I need to tell you about this lady on the chance that you might be able to help her. They said that she had been giving everything away. People would come to the door and she would offer them $100 to go get her something to eat. She was so hungry. And she'd signed her car away to somebody on the promise that they would bring her something to eat. And sometimes the people came back with the food, and sometimes they just left with the money. And she was about to sign her house away when APS called me and said, is there anything you can do? So I called everybody on our board and asked if they would be okay if we took on this lady who was in Bell County. And they said yes, and we had to go get her and bring her here. We didn't have any kind of structure in place in Bell County, but once we accepted one person, then our referrals for Bell County started growing, and then now we're in 82 counties, and it pretty much happened the same way.
And you are in 82 counties. Is that just with the guardianship program?
It is.
The other programs, you listed five different programs mm-hmm. that you provide. And I'm not even sure where to start in terms of asking about these programs and how they grew. I mean, it sounds like you see a need and it's somewhat connected to what you're doing, and you just step in and fill that need, and that grows into a new program. But statewide, it's the guardianship program that's all over the state.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to take guardianship statewide than it is to take the other program statewide, because in guardianship, the people that we take care of, for the most part, are in 24-hour care. There's somebody there to make sure that they're okay. We serve a role in guardianship that's similar to what a family member would do. We make sure that they're getting good care, they're in a safe place, that they're getting nutritious food and all the medical care that they need. And we put together a care plan. We visit them regularly. We pre-plan their funerals. We do all the things a family member would do if they had a family member to do that. But they're in a safe place. In our other programs, in independent living and in our money management programs, people are living out in the community. And particularly if you look at money management, the people who need help with money management usually need a lot of other help. They 5% of what they need might be help with their money, but they may also need somebody to take them to the doctor, someone to grocery shop for them, someone to mow their yard. And without a way to actually have an office in that county where you can recruit and train volunteers, you can't put together the foundation, the support system that you need to take those programs into those other areas. So we're limited, and we have been limited, to how many counties we could serve in money management and independent living and quality of life. But we do now have a vision to actually reach out to all the counties in Texas. We're not going to do that overnight, of course. It's going to be a slow process, but we're going to do this with donated office space. We've had success in the past asking either businesses or the county to provide space. It doesn't take a lot of space, and once we have the donated office space in a community, then we can go in and find a volunteer who might be willing to work 20 hours a week, who would recruit and train and organize the volunteers so that these people who are without services in a lot of our rural communities across Texas can get the help that they need. And once we build that foundation in that community, once we have an office and we've got somebody that's there, doesn't matter if it's 10 to 2 or 9 to 1 or 1 to 5, because the community will know within a short period of time what time the office is open. We can partner with congregations in that community and develop a volunteer base. And we do a lot of work to put in checks and balances, criminal background checks and reference checks to make sure that you put together a safe program. And we've got training that we can put these volunteers through, and then you can create a situation where the folks that need the help in communities all over can get the help that they need.
For those who are just joining us, this is the Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley, and I'm talking with Inez Russell, who's the executive director of Friends for Life. How much of leadership is asking for help?
Well, I think we all need to know that we can't do it all by ourselves. And even those who are very accomplished and can do well have to recognize that each of us are limited to how much impact we can have and how much we can accomplish. But if we can collaborate with others, we can multiply the benefit so much. So I think it's huge that we work together and that we all be a team and that we recognize the fact that we've got a lot of limitations unless we do.
How many volunteers does Friends for Life work with?
Well, it varies. We've had as many as 4,000 in a year. We work with a lot of groups. Beta Stepping Out will bring anywhere from 75 to 200. So we're blessed with groups that work with us. And yesterday we had a Boy Scout who wants to do his Eagle Scout project with us. So we also are blessed with one-on-one situations that actually can create when you have a one-on-one, like an adopt-a-grandparent, you can build relationships and have some truly awesome things come from that.
Some of the volunteers, now you talk about as you open other offices around the state, but even here, some of the volunteers you work with function more as staff than just as a volunteer. How do you get qualified volunteers and make sure that they are doing the things in the right way? And they're not just zealous, I can do this. I mean, there are certain standards you have mm-hmm. to meet, and doing that with volunteers, how do you do that?
Well, I think communication is really, really an important part of that. We do quite a lot initially, and even before somebody comes on board, to run a lot of checks to make sure, and talk to people to find out not just is this a good person, but is this person a good match for working with the elderly and people with disabilities, because it's not a match for everybody. And then you need to train them. You need to spend time making sure that they understand even some of the things that are real basic and common sense or come really naturally to us because we've been doing it for so long. It may be completely something they've never thought of before. So a lot of training and a lot of communication. I think that's really the key.
I know you've told a story about Ida, maybe your first volunteer, I think mm-hmm. is the way you have described her. Tell us the story about Ida.
Well, the first year of Friends for Life, I had gotten a call from a nursing home asking if we would make corsages for everybody in the nursing home. And I didn't know how to make a corsage, and I didn't have any flowers, and I really wanted to say no, but the lady told me how important Mother's Day was and what a sad holiday it was in the nursing homes. And I said, okay, how many do you need? And it was 240, I think. And I thought, okay, 240 corsages. Well, the Friday before Mother's Day, I still didn't know how to make a corsage. I still didn't have any flowers. And I finally went to my husband's office, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to run this charity. I can't even get 240 corsages for a nursing home. And he said, you need to get your mind back on your mission, and everything will be okay. I said, okay, well, in that case, I'm going to Wolf Nursery. And I went to Wolf Nursery, and I gathered up everything I could find that looked like it might turn into a corsage if it had some help, and got over to the cash register, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to tell this guy I didn't have any money. And he said, are you Inez Russell with Friends for Life? And I said, yes. And he said, there's a lady here who's looking for you. And he took me to find this lady who said, when I woke up this morning, I asked God what to do with this money, and he told me to come find you. And she gave me $40, and the bill was $39.94. And I went back to my office, and I dumped out all the sacks on a big table, and I sat there looking at all of the stuff, and I looked up, and there was Ida standing in the door, and she introduced herself, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I was trying to figure out how to make a corsage, and she said, I love to make corsages. Can I make them for you? And two or three other ladies came that day that loved to make corsages, and they made all the corsages and delivered them, and Ida was the most awesome, awesome lady. She not only made corsages, one year she decided she was going to make them for every nursing home resident in Waco, which was, I think, about 1,800 in McLennan County. And she would call me so many mornings saying, well, I fell asleep in the flowers again. And she adopted six grandmas. They were I think they were all younger than she was, and she visited them. One of the ladies that she adopted hadn't spoken since she was 18 years old, and Ida came to my office one day and said, we're communicating. We're doing one blink for yes and two blinks for no, and she was just an amazing lady.
Is this typical of the way things have happened for the last 25 years?
Pretty typical. It's been, this has been an amazing journey, and it's been an education for me. This is God's work, and I'm really blessed to get to watch Him work and see how He puts people together, and He puts things together to that I would never have imagined.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you last year speak at Rotary and tell some of these stories, and I didn't know the scope of the work of Friends for Life. And in fact, until you had your open house and I was able to go and actually get some sense of what you were, I still didn't really have a sense. It's an amazing work that you do in the community. And I looked at your website, and you have facts listed on your website. 18,000 breakfasts per year, 19,000 lunches, and 15,000 healthy snacks. There are 2,680 students, church and civic groups, military, scouts, business professionals, and individuals of all ages who volunteered to help people in need last year. 30,000 hours of volunteer service back in 2013. You've already said you serve in 80 counties, almost 500 people in guardianship. This is an amazing thing that you do. What is your vision for the future?
Well, there are two primary things. One is that the capacity that we have right now in our adult day center is 120 people. And we don't want to have to put people on a waiting list or turn people away. And it takes time to grow an adult daycare center, because you can't just move into any facility. It's lots and lots of bathrooms and special requirements for that kind of facility. So we're going to take the building that we're currently in, and we're going to remodel it and turn it all into adult day center, except for a small part in the middle that will be early childhood. And so we can have on campus the children for the intergenerational programming. And we'll be able to offer special programs for our adults with disabilities, special life skills trainings. And then we'll be able to do some special training also, not training, but programs for our seniors who have Alzheimer's or some type of dementia. But to do that means we've got to build another building to move guardianship, money management, independent living, quality of life, and a chaplain program and a supported decision-making program. And the other part of our vision is to go county by county with donated office space and with volunteers and build a network across the state where we can respond to people who need help and make sure that they can get to the doctor and they can get groceries and they can know somebody cares about them.
We've been talking with Inez Russell, of the Executive Director for Friends for Life, a remarkable program. Inez, I want to thank you for joining us today and letting us hear just a little bit about what you've been doing for the last 25 years.
Well, thanks so much for letting me come.
This program was recorded March 12, 2015 at the KWBU studio.